Sam Kaplan is without a doubt one of the hardest working men in the MMA journalism world. You can read his material on ProElite.com, CBSSportsLine.com, and his very own website, 5OuncesOfPain.com. I want to first off thank Sam for taking the time out today to join us here on Jari Park. How are you doing, Sam?
Good. Thanks, Ariel. Thanks for having me on.
So first off, I just wanted to talk to you a bit about your journalism career. Just a few months ago, you signed with ProElite. And I wanted to know if you had any conflicts with your other two positions on your own website and CBS Sports, and then now joining a promotion. ProElite is the parent company of Elite XC. I was curious to know how that all worked out.
Right. I think there was a lot of misconceptions on the part of certain people out there. I think they thought when I was hired by ProElite that I was going to be a staff writer for EliteXC.com. And there is a difference. I mean, you have ProElite Inc., which is the parent company, and then they have two plays in the mixed martial arts field, which is one being their fight company, Elite XC, and then the second being ProElite.com. And it's hard for people to sort of distinguish the two from each other sometimes, but there is a difference. I mean, they are located in the same office building in Los Angeles, but the offices are actually there's sort of a separation there as well. And ProElite.com pretty much, you know, allows me to cover everything that I want. They've never once given me an assignment. They never once have limited me in what I can cover. So, you know, the way I see it and the way I think it really is I'm pretty much a blogger for ProElite.com, giving them content on a regular basis, as opposed to someone who is a staff writer for, you know, a fight company who's given a certain amount of assignments and they're told what they can and can't write about. I don't have any of those limitations.
Was there ever a point where you wanted to write something maybe particularly negative towards Elite XC and they told you no?
So far, no. I mean, I was very critical of the company in regards to the handling of the Melvin Costa situation. Melvin Costa being someone who is self-described as a white nationalist, has been photographed with several questionable tattoos, one of them being a swastika on his chest. And I was very critical of the King of the Cage for Elite XC, you know, allowing one of their subsidiaries, the King of the Cage promotion, which is based out of California, and allowing him to appear on that card. I didn't think it was that big of a deal when King of the Cage was an independent promotion, but now that they are no longer independent and they are affiliated with a major corporation that is publicly traded on the stock market, you know, I don't think that was a very wise move on their part, and I don't think it's a good stance to be taking, having someone with that tattoo represent their company. And I was very critical of that, and, you know, never once heard any kind of feedback, positive or negative, in regards to how that was covered.
Absolutely. From a journalism standpoint, I thought you handled that situation remarkably. And I was actually curious, I wanted to talk about that later, but since you brought it up, I was curious as to the fallout from it. I know you interviewed Melvin on your website, on ProElite. I know you also interviewed Gary Shaw. Did anything come about from that, or is it just sort of, you know, this is who I am in terms of Melvin, and he's not really going to change, and then ProElite won't really discriminate based on his tattoos on his body?
Right now, I don't know what the status is of Melvin Costa within King of the Cage and also, I guess, ProElite, because I believe he is contracted to ProElite. If he's contracted to King of the Cage, I mean, that contract is affiliated with ProElite. But, you know, I talked to Melvin. Melvin is, you know, he claims he's not a neo-Nazi. He claims he's a white nationalist, and he believes there is a definitive difference between the two. And I talked to Doug DeLuca, the CEO of ProElite Inc., and also, you know, Gary Shaw, the live events president for Elite XC. And they said, you know, basically they were going to look into the situation and deal with it. They didn't specifically outline what they were going to do. And since that point in time, I have not heard one way or the other what they plan to do with Melvin Costa.
If you were the man in charge of ProElite, how would you handle this situation?
I would sever ties with them. I mean, there's really no need to be involved with a guy who, you know, has that tattoo. I mean, if, you know, there was a lot of people that made excuses for him. They claimed it, you know, it was something he did to for survival purposes while he was in jail, that it was a jailhouse tattoo. And if that's the case, that's fine. He's been out of jail for quite some time, a little bit over a year. He, you know, tattoo removal is not cheap, but it's not all that expensive to have it filled in and have it covered up. And he has chosen not to do that. And that's very curious, you know, in my opinion. And, you know, for Melvin Costa, I mean, yeah, there is freedom of speech in this country. And if he wants to go fight and you know, continue to wear that, that's fine. And if he wants to do it for, and if an independent company, a small promotion, wants to, you know, sign him to fight, then that's their prerogative. That, you know, if it's a small company, a private company, King of the Cage was for so many years, they have a right to hire who they want. But when it's a publicly traded company, a company that is a corporation, you know, there's just no reason to hire someone who, you know, is wearing something that offensive on their chest, a symbol that's so offensive to so many people. There's just no reason to be affiliated with someone like that. And if I was in charge, I mean, I wouldn't hesitate twice to, you know, sever ties with them.
Now, you've been covering the world of sports for many years, particularly the NFL, and now you've ventured into the world of MMA. Are you now focusing solely on mixed martial arts in terms of your journalism career?
I've retained one job in regards to mainstream sports, and that's about it. It's a job that I spend maybe 1 to 2 hours a day on, you know, writing football headlines for a website. But other than that, all my attention now is focused completely on mixed martial arts. I'm finally a full-time mixed martial arts writer.
And when did you make that full transition over into the world of mixed martial arts? And I'm also curious as to why you chose. I mean, just a few years ago, no one would have ever imagined mixed martial arts to be covered on sites like CBS, NBC, Yahoo. Why did you decide to go into this sort of unknown world?
I had become disillusioned with mainstream sports for quite some time. I mean, when you follow it close up, you kind of get to see a side of the athletes that really isn't too favorable for most of the time. And, you know, you just see how the athletes conduct themselves, and you see how the sport is from the inside. And it's just so corrupt, and it's just, you know, it's really hard to be a fan of the sport once it's exposed in that nature. And I had, you know, I've been into traditional martial arts for quite some time, and I've followed mixed martial arts off and on since 1993. So the interest was always there. And when I transitioned from training traditional martial arts to mixed martial arts, I was still a sports writer. And you know, you hang around the gym, you train with guys, and you know, you train, and then after you're done training, you know, everyone sits around, they talk to each other, and hey, what do you do for a living? What do you do for a living? And you know, I would tell people I'm a sports writer, and they go, really? You know, do you write about mixed martial arts? And I go, no. And they always found that to be strange. They found it strange that I was a sports writer who was training mixed martial arts but never wrote about it. And I started doing it as a hobby last year, and I was just amazed. You know, one thing led to another. I mean, it was something that I did as a hobby just for fun. And from there, you know, there were employment offers and, you know, continued employment offers. So I've just been kind of flabbergasted, you know, just amazed with the amount of opportunities that have been come forth for me.
Yeah, I find it very interesting your venture into that world, because it's sort of our story here at Jari Park, the same type of thing, being disillusioned with the world of sports and now just embracing the combat sports world. Which it's kind of funny to talk about how corrupt, you know, pro sports are, and then you think of, you know, the combat sports to have that stigma attached to it. But you know, your site is definitely one of the first that we check out every day, and we appreciate all the work that you do for the world of mixed martial arts. I wanted to talk to you about the Elite XC show coming up this Saturday night. Renegade show, they're calling it, from Corpus Christi, Texas. I'm really excited for this one. As a fight fan, I'm not really sure what to do, because there's Cotto Mosley going on at the same time. Have you spoken to anyone at Elite XC about the scheduling of this event, and if it might have been a little ill-timed as to having it on the same night as one of the biggest boxing fights of the year?
No, I've not spoken to anyone at Elite XC about that, but this wouldn't be the first time a major mixed martial arts event has been scheduled against a major boxing event. And you know, there is some crossover audience, but I don't think there's enough that it's going to, you know, have a huge adverse effect on the ratings. And another thing you have to take into consideration, I believe the Cotto Mosley fight is a pay-per-view fight, whereas the Showtime bout, I mean, you know, that's only part of the $9.95 monthly fee that most people pay to their cable or satellite TV provider. So, you know, I think when you look at it, the way it's been done in the past with, you know, UFC has gone against boxing shows before, and I don't think it's really hurt them. And I don't think you're going to see that happen this Saturday night either for Showtime and Elite XC.
The main event of the card is Nick Diaz going up against KJ Nunes. Diaz just fought a couple months ago in Hawaii. Nunes as well, just a few months ago. For me, I view this one as a mismatch. I don't know if KJ is quite up at the level of a Nick Diaz. They've created this new weight class for Nick Diaz at 160 pounds. Are you viewing this one as just another Nick Diaz win, or do you think that KJ Nunes, the dual boxer and MMA fighter, has a chance of upsetting Diaz?
I thought, you know, Nick Diaz versus Mike Ina on September 15th in Hawaii was going to be a mismatch, and, you know, I was wrong, and I think a lot of people were wrong. Mike Ina clearly held his own. I don't think Nick Diaz fought to his full potential during that bout, and, it, you know, there's always the chance that Nick Diaz fights down to his competition again this coming Saturday against KJ Nunes, and I think KJ Nunes is a very underrated fighter. I think it's very unfortunate for him that he got knocked out as quick as he did against Crazy Horse Bennett during Elite XC's first show back in February, because he's a much better fighter than that. And I think he's had a little trouble shaking off the stigma of that early knockout, because there was a little bit of a buzz. There's some hype put out behind him coming into that fight. And then to see him go down that quickly, a lot of people just labeled him as a flat-out bust. And that's not the case. I mean, his stand-up is top-notch. Not only is he a good boxer, but you know, he does some other things well with some of his kicks. I mean, I think he's a very versatile striker, maybe not someone I would call an 8-point Muay Thai striker, but a very good kickboxer and a guy that can do a lot of damage. And it's someone that can hurt Nick Diaz. If Nick Diaz stands and trades with him, KJ Nunes has a lot of power. And to me, I equate this matchup a lot, at least stylistically, to Diaz's fight last February for Pride against Takanori Gomi. I think Nunes and Gomi on paper are very similar in a lot of ways. I don't think Nunes is anywhere good of a puncher as Takanori Gomi, but I do think he's close in certain areas, has a lot of power, and you know, is definitely going to stay strong in the pocket if Nick Diaz stands and trades with him there. So for Nick Diaz, I think the key in this bout is to get the fight on the ground, which would be KJ Nunes' biggest weakness. It's an area where he works hard on. He does work hard on his jiu-jitsu, and he works hard on the ground. But Nick Diaz is world class. He's one of only two black belts under Cesar Gracie in California. So, you know, if Nick Diaz takes this fight to the ground, which is something he really didn't do much of against Mike Ina, then I think this fight could end very quickly. If he wants to trade, if he wants to prove himself standing up and doesn't want to go to the ground, you know, then I think KJ Nunes is going to make this a fight.
That said, who are you picking in the fight?
Nick Diaz, without question.
You mentioned Diaz's fight against Takanori Gomi, and just last week, Gary Shaw on an Elite XC press conference had mentioned that Diaz was under contract with Elite XC, and this kind of baffled me when he fought Gomi at Pride 33. Is that in fact true?
Yeah, I mean, I remember quite vividly that the Nick Diaz was announced as being signed to Elite XC before he ever fought for Pride. So I think the contract signing with Elite, to my knowledge, though, the contract that he signed with Elite XC came after he signed with Pride, but he was under contract with Elite XC when he fought for Pride. But under the terms of the Elite XC agreement, the first contract he signed with them, it was a non-exclusive. So I don't think he needed to get permission from Elite XC in order to fight Gomi on that Pride card, although I have heard it phrased by Gary Shaw that they, you know, gave Nick Diaz their endorsement to go fight on that card.
What do you think of guys like KJ Nunes? And in that press conference last week, Gary Shaw was talking about having Kimbo Slice, who we'll talk about in a minute, being the first ever dual MMA and heavyweight boxing champion of the world. Do you think that KJ still focusing on his boxing career as well as his MMA career hurts him in the long run?
Yes, I believe it does. And I talked to KJ maybe it was a month ago, and he's still committed to boxing. He hasn't been training much with it because he just came back from an injury, and you know, they're offering him a regular amount of MMA fights at this point. So you know, if Gary Shaw keeps offering him mixed martial arts fights, then you know, you're not going to see KJ Nunes do a lot of boxing. But if Gary Shaw wants him to devote his attention to both and puts out boxing contracts there for him, then you're going to see him continue to split his time like he did for much of last year, at least the early portion of last year. And I think that's a huge mistake on the part of KJ Nunes, because the ground game, there's so many layers to it, and just the jiu-jitsu aspect of it. You can train your entire life and still not get to your peak level, because there's just so many different styles when it comes to jiu-jitsu. There's so many different philosophies, and you know, it's a type of combat sport that's always evolving. It's not something that's completely rooted in hundreds and hundreds of years of tradition. I mean, there are guys, there's always going to be new guys that come up with new techniques, new styles. You know, some guys are power players, some guys are more finesse style. And for a guy like KJ Nunes, who comes from, you know, traditionally a stand-up background, it's going to take him a lot longer to really master the ground game. And, you know, when you're out there, you know, training boxing and learning boxing techniques, that's taking time away from the time you could be spending learning jiu-jitsu.
Now, Nunes and Diaz is the scheduled main event for this coming Saturday's Elite XC Renegade show. But without a doubt, the most anticipated fight is the debut of Kimbo Slice. You know, he started in June against Ray Mercer into his first foray into the legalized MMA world. What can fans expect from Kimbo? Is he actually the real deal? And is this guy going to be a force to be reckoned with within the heavyweight division for many years to come?
I kind of think Gary Shaw overhyped him during the Elite XC press conference last week. I don't see Kimbo Slice ever becoming a heavyweight champion in a major mixed martial arts promotion. You know, I definitely think he's more than a one-dimensional guy. I mean, this guy's hands are legitimate. I mean, you know, yes, he comes from a street fighting background. Yes, most of his fights have been on the internet and on YouTube. But if you watch those fights, you can see this man is gifted. His hands are not only powerful, but he's exceptionally quick for a guy, you know, of that size. And I think his punching technique is very efficient. I mean, he's not a guy that comes out with, you know, wild swings on a constant basis. A lot of his punches are very compact from a biomechanic standpoint. They're very sound. So, you know, in that regard, I think Kimbo's stand-up is legit. And, you know, in watching the Ray Mercer fight that took place, I believe it was last June, for the Cage Fury Fighting Championships promotion in Atlantic City, you know, he didn't go in there thinking that he had something to prove to the mixed martial arts world in the sense where he had to, you know, say, hey, street fighting and brawling is the way to go, and I'm going to go out here and, you know, prove all you guys wrong that, you know, street fighting can get it done. No, he, you know, assimilated to, you know, basic mixed martial arts philosophies. He listened to Bass Rutten, he listened to his corner, and, you know, he eventually got that fight onto the ground. He put Ray Mercer on his back and, you know, eventually, you know, choked him out with a guillotine when Ray Mercer kind of flipped the, you know, they were in the corner there and during that fight, and Ray Mercer, you know, put Kimbo on his back a little bit and, you know, left his neck out there, and Kimbo didn't hesitate to take it, you know. So Kimbo is someone who is very impressionable. He's embraced, you know, mixed martial arts training, and, you know, as long as he doesn't go in there with an ego thinking that he has to remain a street fighter, then I think he's fine. It's, you know, because there's going to be times, you know, where he's going to get rocked. I mean, the guy that he's facing this Saturday, Bo Cantrell, is no joke. I mean, the guy does not have the best chin in the world, but he's a very big athletic guy with a lot of power. And if Kimbo, you know, gets rocked out there, gets nailed on the chin, and, you know, feels himself going out, well, you know, hopefully he'll, you know, he won't hesitate to take the fight to the ground. Otherwise, you know, this whole Kimbo hype machine is going to end very quickly. So, you know, I think Kimbo is going to do a lot better than a lot of his critics think, but I don't think he's going to ever be a, you know, a top 10 heavyweight in mixed martial arts.
Kimbo, as you mentioned, is fighting Bo Cantrell, who just fought less than 2 weeks ago. Is this kind of a tomato that they're serving up Kimbo? I mean, obviously Bo Cantrell is a veteran in MMA and has been around a lot longer than Kimbo Slice. Obviously, the worst case scenario for Gary Shaw and Elite XC would be for Kimbo to lose this Saturday. How do you view this fight going, and do you think that they sort of served him up a softball?
I definitely think, in their eyes, they believe they've served a softball, and I can understand why, you know, people on the outside would think that as well, because it was only 2 weeks ago that Bo Cantrell lost to Brad Imes via Gogo Plata in the first round in the King of the Cage show in Reno, Nevada. So, you know, it's really hard to sell that to the public, a guy who just lost a couple weeks ago, and, you know, get them to think that he has a legitimate chance against Kimbo. But, you know, if Bo Cantrell catches him, you never know. I mean, Cantrell has a questionable chin, but he has very powerful hands, and he's very athletic. This is a guy who played high school basketball, so he's got somewhat of an athletic background. He's not some, you know, beer swigging brawler who, you know, is bouncing on the weekends at the local bar. This is a guy who trains mixed martial arts on a regular basis. He's a legit fighter. But I do think that, you know, Elite XC is aware that he's had a glass jaw at times, and they know, you know, Kimbo's background is being a strong puncher. And I think that's how they probably internally expect this fight to go. They expect, you know, Kimbo to catch, you know, Bo Cantrell and probably finish him early.
Just last month, actually, MMA fans were expecting to see Kimbo fight Tank Abbott. That fight fell through, and that led to Kimbo signing with Elite XC. Why didn't Gary Shaw and the folks at Elite XC try to re-sign that fight and have Kimbo's first foray into the Elite XC world be against the veteran Tank Abbott?
Well, I believe they were talking to Tank Abbott up until recently. I don't know for a fact, but my assumption is the reason why they probably didn't sign that match is because of money. Tank Abbott probably wanted a lot of money, and from what I heard, he was already paid a partial payment to fight Kimbo in that ill-fated Cage Fury Fighting Championships card. So I guess maybe he wanted to hold out and get even more money from Elite XC, especially since the fight was going to be broadcast on Showtime. And just because Tank wasn't signed for this fight, it wouldn't surprise me if that match is still made down the line. There was a lot of interest from the internet community in seeing Tank and Kimbo fight. And, you know, assuming Kimbo wins on Saturday night, that's still a matchup that Elite XC can make down the line should they choose to.
All right, so Kimbo Cantrell this Saturday. Who are you picking?
I'm going with Kimbo. I just think that Kimbo has a much stronger chin than Bo Cantrell. And I think, if Kimbo puts the heat on him, that Cantrell, probably will go down. And if Cantrell catches him, based on what I saw out of Kimbo during the Ray Mercer fight, Kimbo's not going to be too stubborn to, take the fight to the ground.
A lot of MMA fans were a little critical of Gary Shaw when he signed Kimbo Slice. And once the announcement of the reality show with Mark Burnett was kind of put public into how they were going to do this with having athletes like Herschel Walker and Jose Canseco train in MMA to eventually fight on the show, people were wondering, well, what is the approach of Elite XC? Are they going the freak show route? Are they trying to make a viable promotion here? Are they going to go the pride route of the early days and have these crazy matchups with guys like Kimbo Slice? What did you think of the signing and now approach of Elite XC with this new reality show and bringing in guys like Kimbo?
Well, the reality show is half-baked, and I'd be surprised if it ever got off the ground. I mean, the deal Mark Burnett has with Elite XC is that in order for him to really get compensated, that show has to get on network TV. And I'm not spoiling any kind of inside knowledge of that. I got that straight out of the stock filing with the SEC. I mean, that's there for everyone to see. So, I mean, they announced that the concept for the show. They announced Herschel Walker's involvement. They announced Canseco's involvement, but they didn't announce a network picking the show up, and I think they're probably shopping that show to network TV right now. And with the writer strike, maybe they have an outside chance of that show getting picked up. With a lot of the sitcoms now, they're probably gonna stop production pretty soon, and a lot of the major networks are going to be looking at more reality TV shows in the event that the strike is prolonged and they need to get additional programming. But that's really the only prayer that show has. And it's really questionable on the part of Elite XC to have someone like Jose Canseco involved, a guy that is a known steroid user, a guy that's admitted using steroids and has endorsed the use of steroids, especially to young athletes, which I think is really irresponsible. And for Elite XC to associate themselves with someone like that is just it really hurts the sport. And I think eventually, it wouldn't surprise me if Jose Canseco was suddenly no longer involved with the project. But then again, it would surprise me if the project ever saw the light of day. In regard to Kimbo, I mean, there are a lot of critics, but there's also a lot of fans of the signing as well. To me, I don't see him as a circus act. I see him as a special attraction. This is a guy that people want to see. This is a guy who is very talented in regards to the stand-up game. And, he's devoted himself to, learning mixed martial arts and becoming a more versatile mixed martial artist. And, he's just someone that I think is a lot of fun, and there's a lot of excitement involved with watching him. And, if they were promoting him from the aspect that this is a guy who is still a street fighter and they were trying to glorify street fighting and they were trying to send a message to younger fighters out there that, yeah, you can get a job with us, by going on the street and filming your fights, on the internet, then that would be wrong. But I think the way that, this is being presented thus far is, a guy who, made his living on the streets, a guy that made a name for himself and got credibility through the internet, who's now trying to go legitimate. He doesn't, he's really, Kimbo, when I interviewed him, he expressed no interest in going back to unsanctioned fighting. He, has no intent right now to compete in another, street fight again. I mean, he's serious about mixed martial arts. He wants MMA to be his full-time career. So it's really hard for me to buy into people criticizing Kimbo, a guy who's all he wants to do is go legit. He wants a chance to, make money in sanctioned fighting.
The other big fight on the card is Jake Shields going up against Mike Pyle. And at one point, that fight was rumored to be for the Elite XC welterweight title at 170, and now it's not. Whether or not it has anything to do with this being Mike Pyle's last fight, I guess that makes sense. Or Jake Shields' comments just a few weeks ago that he was looking to sign with the UFC in the near future once his contract expired with Elite XC. First off, I wanted to get your thoughts on that matchup. I view this one to be one of the most interesting matchups on the card, just in terms of the styles clash. And I think that this one is a real toss-up. I know Shields is definitely the favorite. He's won his last 8 fights in a row. But Mike Pyle, training out of Extreme Couture, is no slouch. Who are you picking in this fight, A, and B, what are the futures of Jake Shields and Mike Pyle in Elite XC?
I'm going with Jake Shields in this fight. I like Mike Pyle a lot as a fighter. He's very versatile. The thing is, though, he does a lot of things well. He doesn't do anything great. And you look at Jake Shields, this is a guy whose wrestling is, you know, top-notch. He is one of the best wrestlers in the world at 170 pounds, and he's, you know, a jiu-jitsu brown belt, so his submission skills are excellent. And he's really improved as a finisher with his last 4 fights ending early. And I just think he's going to be, I think in the end he's going to prove to be too much for Mike Pyle. In regards to, you know, why this isn't a 170 in regards to why this isn't a welterweight title match, I think Ariel, I think you might have even brought up the question to Gary Shaw during the conference call last week. And, you know, according to Shaw, he said that, you know, they offered the title shot to Mike Pyle and he didn't want it. I don't know if that means he, you know, said I don't want the title at all, or I don't want to sign, you know, a contract extension that I would need to sign in order to compete for a title. I don't know, you know, the reasons behind him not wanting to fight for the title. And, you know, you have to think that that definitely is a huge factor, the fact that both these guys are in the last fight on their current contract. And that's, you know, that's something, you know, a lot of promotions do. I mean, the UFC, they don't allow fighters, you know, on the last fight on their current contract to compete for a title. You know, we saw the IFL with Ben Rothwell. They wanted Ben Rothwell to re-up for 2008. Before they allowed him into the World Grand Prix. They didn't want to see a guy go into the World Grand Prix, win a world title, and then a month later sign with another promotion. And I think that's just smart business. And, you know, I can understand where all those promotions are coming from in not allowing guys on the last fight of their contract to compete for a title. You know, Jake Shields, it's going to be an interesting situation because this is a guy who can compete in any promotion in the world at 170 pounds. The guy is that good, and the guy keeps getting better. And he has said he wants to face the best in the world at 170 pounds. And he sort of has backed off the statement that he would like to fight for the UFC. And I know his father, Jake Shields, who manages him, has sort of backed off the statement publicly as well. They've tried to distance themselves from that interview that was conducted a couple months ago. But the fact remains, you know, Jake Shields is sincere when he says he wants to fight the best in his division. And the best guys at 170 are all in the UFC. There really aren't any good guys at 170 pounds right now contracted to Pro Elite or Elite XC. So, I mean, if the UFC makes a good offer, I would have to assume that, you know, Jake Shields is definitely going to listen to that.
If you would look into your crystal ball for 2008, do you envision Shields fighting with the UFC?
I don't, and the reason why is because I don't think the UFC would offer him the kind of money that, you know, he would probably garner from a contract extension offer from Elite XC. The UFC, you know, they kind of, if they don't feel a guy's already an established star, a guy that can draw a lot of numbers to pay-per-view, they're not going to break the bank for them. And I don't see them breaking the bank for Jake Shields. But you never know, because they do have some things that they need to plan for the future. I mean, if Matt Hughes is serious in saying that he only has 2 to 3 fights left in him, and that he's not going to fight long-term, and you know, then they definitely need someone that can come in at 170 and fill the void there, and Jake Shields would be perfect for that role.
One of the most interesting points that came out of last week's press conference was Gary Shaw's announcement of new weight classes being formed within Elite XC. 140, 150, 160, 170, 185, 205, and then 265 and up. Would love to get your thoughts on this new breakdown of the weight classes. To me, it really envisions or reminds me of the world of boxing. Not sure if that's a positive or a negative. Gary Shaw's point of him being concerned about the extreme weight cutting is definitely a valid one, and I think for the benefit of the fighters, it's one that everyone has to welcome. What are your thoughts on these new weight classes, and do you think that in the long run this is something that all MMA organizations, IFL, UFC, anyone's over in Japan will now adopt, or is this going to be just an Elite XC type of thing?
I think it's just going to be an elite XC thing, and I think the way it's been presented by certain people in the press that he's created new weight classes is kind of overblown. I mean, the only new weight classes that he's created here are 140, 150, and 160, and I think they instituted the 160-pound division as a way to build around Nick Diaz. It's the perfect division for him, and then, you know, I think the creations of the 150 and the 140 were done as fallout from the creation of the 160, because you can't really have a 155 and a 160. That's kind of redundant. So I think they, you know, rechristened the 155 as a 150 division, and, you know, Elite XC has had a lot of 145-pound matches on their Show XC events and some of the undercard matches for their Elite XC events. So, you know, if you have a 150-pound division, then you need to, you know, rechristen the 145-pound division as 140. So to me, it's not that big of a deal. I don't think they've added, you know, they really haven't added an extra number of weight divisions. I mean, they're just reclassifying their weights. I mean, if you look at Zuffa and, you know, combine the WEC and the UFC, you know, you take their 145-pound division and you factor it in with all the UFC's, you know, divisions, then, you know, it's pretty much the same amount. The only, you know, special weight class that I see Elite XC having is the super heavyweight division, where guys who are over 265 pounds can compete. But other than that, I don't see what the big deal is.
The Elite XC is the home to Gina Carano, one of the top female fighters in the world and probably the most visible one. I wanted to get your thoughts on females stepping into the octagon, into the ring. You've spoken at length about your wife being involved in BJJ tournaments. Dana White has been very opposed to the idea of females, and specifically when people ask him about Gina Carano fighting in the UFC, doesn't seem to be willing to embrace that part of the sport. What do you think about A, Gina Carano, and B, Elite XC really being the home to women's fighting on the national stage?
Well, I think, you know, if you bring up the conversation of women's fighting, you can't talk about Elite XC without bringing in Bodog Fight, which I think has done even more in a lot of ways than Elite XC to really promote women's fighting. I mean, you know, Elite XC right now, the only thing they have is the Gina Carano division. I mean, everything is pretty much built around her when it comes to female MMA. But if you look at Bodog Fight, I mean, they have fights in two different women's weight classes. I mean, they have 125-pound fights and 135-pound fights, and they've even crowned a champion in the 135-pound division with Tara LaRosa. And they've definitely had a more versatile amount of female fighters that they have brought in and compete for them. So I think when you look at Bodog and what Elite XC has done in regards to female fighting, I think it's good. I think there's a lot of female fighters out there, a lot of very good female fighters, and I think it's good for the sport. I mean, the way that the females have represented the sport thus far in televised matches has been nothing but, you know, exemplary. I mean, there really hasn't been anyone out there that is really, you know, there really hasn't been a female out there that really has given pause to the movement that some of these promotions are making right now. There isn't anyone that's kind of made anyone cringe or second guess themselves. And, you know, you look at that first fight that Elite XC had last February between Gina Carano and Julie Kedzie. That was the fight of the night. I mean, they came out there and had the best fight. And, you know, I think Dana White's concerns are from a marketing standpoint. I think he's worried about having females in the ring bleeding, you know, beating each other. And I think he's worried about what kind of image that would send to the mainstream media and press and sort of, I guess, you know, middle America that might not be as familiar with MMA. You know, he doesn't want females fighting to be the first image that, you know, a novice fan or a new fan would see. And, you know, I mean I can understand where he's coming from to some extent, but if he saw that match between Gina Carano and Julie Kedzie, I mean, they did nothing in that match that would do anything to hurt mixed martial arts. So I think from a marketing standpoint, it's smart for Elite XC to have a women's division. It's unique. It separates their product from other promotions out there. And, you know, if they bring in additional fighters on a full-time basis outside of Gina Carano, then they can, you know, make a legitimate claim that they have the best female division anywhere in the world. I mean, there's some Japanese promotions that have some very talented female fighters. But, you know, if Elite XC does go out there and they go out and they bring in the best fighters, and they're going to have, you know, a leg up on their competition.
You mentioned Bodog Fight, and they've been working with Strikeforce and numerous other promotions out there to try to join their efforts since they've sort of fallen on hard times lately. And last week, again, Gary Shaw mentioned that he'd be open to working with all the organizations out there. I don't really foresee them having a working relationship with the UFC, but he mentioned M1, which is now the home of Fedor and numerous other promotions. What do you think about the world of MMA now sort of having this landscape where promotions are going to start working with each other and having guys fight on different cards? Could that eventually lead to the problems that we've seen occur in the world of boxing?
Well, first I want to see it happen. There's a lot of promotions that are talking about how they're willing to work with each other, but they want optimum business conditions. And thus far, the promotions out there have not found common ground when talking to each other. And we haven't seen, you know, very many examples of promotions working with each other. So they're all talking a good game. I'd like to see some action. And until we see it happen, you know, I don't know if it's going to be something that could really hurt the sport to the effect that we've seen in boxing. And, you know, I think at this point it can only help when you have 8 or 9 different promotions promoting in North America, because the talent gets spread out at that point. And it can't hurt to have, the top guy in at light heavyweight in one promotion fighting the top guy at light heavyweight in another promotion. I don't see how that's a bad thing. If we get good matchups, if we get quality fight cards when promotions work together, then I can only see that helping the sport. But, you know, until the promotions actually sit down and sign contracts with each other, I don't think it's something that we really even need to think about at this point.
Just yesterday, Fedor had mentioned that he was interested in fighting or looking to fight on New Year's Eve in Japan. Have you heard of anyone that could be potentially placed as his opponent?
No. And, you know, I've heard a lot of rumors and speculation about that. But to me right now, that's nothing more than, you know, an open message that, you know, M1 put out on its website. And we don't know who that really came from, because we don't know who really has full control of the website. I mean, was that Fedor's people that, you know, put that out there? Was that someone at the top of M1 that put that out there? I mean, it was a very cryptic message, and I'm not sure if there's anything that will ever come of that. You know, we'll see. It would certainly be nice to see Fedor compete in Japan again on New Year's Eve. But, you know, I don't think M1 is in a position right now to do that card themselves, and whether or not we'd see Fedor compete for a existing Japanese promotion, you know, that remains to be seen. I'm not sure if anything's going to come of that message that was released yesterday.
One of the big free agents in the heavyweight division is Josh Barnett. It appears as though Dana White has no interest in signing him within the UFC. Gary Shaw had mentioned that he was very interested in signing the former UFC heavyweight champ. Are you hearing that he is going to potentially sign with Elite XC? Could he be Fader's opponent maybe in February or this New Year's Eve?
Last I heard from Josh Barnett was that he was considering 2 different offers. But, you know, it could be even more than that at this point. I mean, who knows who's jumped in and out of the picture at this point. It wouldn't surprise me if, you know, we saw Josh Barnett end up fighting Fedor. That was one of the big matchups in Pride that never happened. Josh Barnett for so many years was a top heavyweight with Pride, while Fedor was the champion. And for various reasons, we never got to see that matchup. And that's a matchup to a lot of fans that are familiar with the two. It's a matchup that they want to see. So, you know, right now there aren't a lot of obvious matchups, money matchups out there for Fedor and M1, but one of those few matchups are Josh Barnett. And if they're willing to spend money, then, you know, I don't see any reason why that matchup wouldn't happen. I mean, Josh Barnett just wants to be paid, an amount of money that he considers fair. I mean, I think he had some discussions with the UFC. I don't think he was happy with the offer he garnered from them. He was in talks with Elite XC for a while now, and I think if they would have met his asking price, he would have signed with them by now. So to me, there's a perfect opportunity for M1 to sign him to a multiple fight contract or even a 1-fight contract and make that big matchup with Fedor.
We're talking with Sam Kaplan. You can read his material at cbssportsline.com, 5OuncesOfPain.com, and proelite.com. And Sam, before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the Randy Couture situation, talking with one of the best MMA journalists out there. How do you foresee this whole drama, soap opera playing out? A lot of people are saying that this is it. Really, Randy seems to be willing to stick to his guns and never fight for the UFC again. Or some people think that cooler heads will prevail in the long run. I'd love to get your prediction on how the whole Dana White versus Randy feud will play out.
I've sort of gone back and forth on this. I kind of thought it was a foregone conclusion that Randy would eventually re-sign with the UFC once things blew over. Then, you know, the next day I was looking at documents on my computer showing cash checks Randy Couture signed, you know, that were issued by the UFC, and then reading intimate details about his business dealings. So, you know, I don't know. We'll have to see. I mean, was the UFC's decision to put that personal information out there, was that something that really crossed the line in the mind of Randy Couture to the extent where he'll never work with them again? I don't know. And, you know, to be honest with you, I think time does heal all wounds. I don't think the UFC did anything yet that can't be forgotten or forgived if the right amount of compensation is agreed upon. And it wouldn't surprise me if 2 to 3 months from now, you know, everybody's temper kind of calmed down a little bit, if, you know, cooler heads did in fact prevail and they start, and a dialogue opened up in regards to bringing Randy Couture back into the UFC, because I don't see him legally being able to fight anywhere in the world outside of the UFC at this point.
Late last week, Dana White announced that he was creating an interim lightweight title due to the fact that he was so upset with the way the California State Athletic Commission was handling Sean Sherk's appeal of their suspension and whatnot. And he announced that BJ Penn and Joe Stevenson were going to fight for that interim title. And then once the Sherk situation had been resolved, that they would kind of unify both belts. Have you heard anything about whether Dana White was thinking of creating an interim heavyweight title and then waiting to see how the how the Randy Couture situation played out, and then again unifying those titles?
No, I've heard nothing about the possibility of creating an interim title for the heavyweight division at this point.
All right, Sam. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I know we spoke a lot about the Elite XC promotion and their big show coming up this Saturday, but love to have you on in the future to talk all things MMA, because we couldn't think of a better source. Again, you can catch Sam's material on 5OuncesOfPain.com, ProElite.com, and CBSSportsLive.com. Sam, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ariel.